This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. This is a labor of love because we welcome home two sheroes of the movement for struggle, for equal rights and justice. Janet, Africa, and Janine, Africa, behind the walls. 41 years on a move. And we won't rest until all our political prisoners are free at last. Though many of us can name Mumia Abu-Jamal as our hero, there are far too many of us who have no idea who he is and what he has contributed to human history. It is a product of the state's attempted eradication of all liberation movements fighting against U.S. imperialism, particularly those led by people of color, and assuredly those movements within its own borders. Such is the case with Mumia and his comrade members of the MOVE organization. Janet and Janine Africa were falsely accused in the death of police officer James Ramp, along with seven other members of their organization. The MOVE 9 were innocent men and women who were imprisoned in August 1978 following a massive police attack on their communal home in the Powelton Village neighborhood of Philadelphia. This was 7 years before the government continuing campaign of terror against the group dropped an incendiary bomb on MOVE, killing 11 people, including five babies.
It's been 41 years of unjust imprisonment for Janet Africa and Janine Africa. But despite the hardship of being separated from family members, despite the grief over the murder of family members, they remained strong with an uncompromising commitment to their beliefs, despite what the government has done to break them and ultimately try to eliminate MOVE organization. Now Janet Africa and Janine Africa, finally released from prison due to the efforts of pressure groups across the globe, are back in the beloved community.
Well, they will talk about how they survived 41 years behind the walls and continuing to mobilize the massive amount of public pressure to force this government to release the remainder of the MOVE 9 and Mumia Abu-Jamal and to free all political prisoners. On a MOVE, celebrate Shiro's Janet Africa, Janine Africa, 41 years behind the walls, to come out as, and we begin our program On a MOVE.
Mumia, can you hear us?
What were the greatest challenges during your time in prison?
The greatest challenges for us was being separated from our family and being wrongly accused, being innocent and being imprisoned for something that we didn't do and something that this government knows we didn't do. They know that they shot and killed Officer Ram and sent us to prison 30 to 100 years for nothing, because they wanted to quiet MOVE. They wanted to stop the MOVE organization. They wanted to stop the power and the teaching of John Africa, which they have not done, will not do, and MOVE is continuing to put out information, continuing to be strong, continuing to fight John Africa's revolution.
I hope you received from the entire movement the applause, the affection, the love that all of you so richly deserve. What have you seen since you got out that you can't believe? And I know it's kind of crazy, I mean, but tell me about when you look at society, what blows your mind?
All of this technology. that is, we still
all of this technology.
Yes, all of this technology. But really what is really impressing us, Mumia, is to actually see the faces of the power that's been being fueled to help us get released. You know, we've heard names, we've gotten letters, but we're actually seeing this force and feeling all of the love and the appreciation they have for the work we've had to do for 41 years.
Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Monoy.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
And that's something I don't miss. we have been being welcomed so warmly that it's just touching our hearts.
Let me ask this question. What message do you think for the young generation who are so deeply involved in technology and cell phones and stuff like that, that they barely talk to people? What message would he have for them?
Well, it's kind of understandable because that's how the system does people. That's how it holds on to people, keeps people diverted from what's really going on. But at this point, the only thing we could do is set the example to show the young people what's really important, what really makes you free, what really makes you happy. And we can't do anything but be the example. And when they fall, they can look at us and see how to stand up and keep going.
Good. All right. What is it about MOVE that other movements can learn and grow from to strengthen their movement?
Well, I think basically people can just go back when to MOVE first came above ground and they saw the examples of MOVE and what we did, places that we demonstrated, things that we did. We protected animals. We demonstrated our places to protect women. We protected the rights of the water, the oil, the air, the soil. And MOVE was doing this years ago. In 1970, MOVE was protecting animals. You know, they talked about animal shelters now, and everybody is adamant about protecting life. John Africa taught us this back in the 70s. We were doing this. Some guy back in the 70s was saying, they're supposed to be revolutionaries. What are they doing demonstrating against zoos? What are they doing, you know, demonstrating against people who are circuses? Because MOVE was protecting life. All those animals and the MOVE demonstrated for their rights. And now it's all over. Everybody's doing that. How we were fighting for women's rights. You know, how we were fighting for the air, the water. We protest against the oil refinery. The people are saying they're revolutionaries. What are they doing out there? But now people are so involved in the atmosphere. You know, everybody wants to do something about it now. But John Africa was telling people this a long time ago. And a long time ago, they were calling us crazy. But now everybody's doing it. When we were eating raw food, when our diet was to eat raw food, right, our children raw food, people saw that as crazy. But everybody's doing it now. And when we face people now, they say, I understand what the purpose was about back then, but I didn't understand it then. And a lot of them are apologizing for the way that they mistreated MOVE for doing the things that they were doing, and people are still trying to catch up. We'll never stop. I'm saying we want to teach our children, yeah, this is the technology that they have today, but you don't have to become a slave to that technology. Sure, you can use it, but don't perpetuate it. You know, don't believe that it's your heart and soul. You know, we are taught to protect and defend life.
All right. Well, listen, I'm on another brother's time. I don't want to chop his time up. So I want to thank y'all for being there. It's a pleasure to hear y'all's voices. It's a pleasure to know that you're there instead of in the joint. I love you all.
Janine and Janet, isn't this the first time you've spoken to him?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. The first time. first time.
I'm Suzanne Ross. I've been active in this movement for a long time.
So, Janine and Janet, another round of applause for the great audience. To start, I think a lot of you do know at least some of the history.
The bombing on May 13, 1985 was not the only confrontation that took place with MOVE, that there were dozens of them way before, and that in fact the one where the MOVE 9 all ended up being imprisoned for so many decades happened starting in 1978. Janine and Janet at that time were in their 20s, with children, living in this collective household, and being attacked by the Philadelphia police and all its machinations, which led to their going to prison. This talk about what happened when the police came in into the Powhatan Village house that you were living in, what you did with the children and yourselves, and how you were taken to prison from there. If you could tell a little bit about that so that the audience gets the feel, because I start shaking when you tell those stories. I keep being blown away by their heroism, sheroism.
Everybody saw the arrest, August 8th, but nobody knows what went on in that house, except for us. You know, we were in the basement, and over 500 cops and firemen lined up outside of that house at 3 in the morning. And they knocked out all our windows, tore down our fence, tore down our platform, drilled holes in the floor above us, and stationed themselves around the whole house and started opening fire. And all we could do was hold our children as close to us as we could and wait to be shot down, because that's how they came at us. They had a deluge hose that was so powerful, was picking up the 6-foot railroad ties that was part of our fence and throwing them back in the window like they were toothpicks. They had the water so high up that the children had to stand on our backs and on our legs so that they wouldn't drown. And when that didn't flush us out, they start pouring in smoke canisters and tear gas. Later told to us that it was an instant death mechanism, because once that smoke and water mix, it cuts your breath off instantly. And that's what happened. And when they did that, it felt like that was our last breath that we was taking, our last breath that our children were taking. We sat there and we watched the bullet sparks fly off the walls next to us. We just seeing them, where you see the gunshot. And we sat there until we heard one of the men say, "Get the men, the women and children out." And we couldn't see a hand in front of us. I made it out of that house and was surrounded by police officers snatching our babies and laughing, talking about how good little mothers we were. When we went to court and saw the film, they filmed the whole thing. The time that we was coming up out the basement, the cops were still shooting. We didn't know it. It's only because of the power of John Africa that we made it out of that building alive with our children.
I want everybody to know the reason that they did this to us is because of the position that we took against the system, against police brutality, against what they were doing to animals, what they were doing to the water, the soil, the air. MOVE was innocent. We were not guilty of anything. The only thing that MOVE was guilty of was exposing this system for people to see what it was. That's why they used the news media to cover it up, to make it look like MOVE was dirty, MOVE was crazy, because then people would say, well, they got what they deserved. But we did not get what we deserved. We got what they wanted to give us to fool people into thinking that that's what we deserved when we didn't. When I was in that basement, and I'm not very tall, when they shot in the smoke and the gas, you couldn't see anything, you couldn't hear anything, and I had 2 children with me. And being short as I was, I just got up. The water, they shot water, and the water came up to here on me. So what I did was like this, and the 2 children stood right here on me, their heads and their noses above water.
these people that were trying to kill us, the cops, the firemen, they knew there was children in that basement, but they kept on shooting water, they kept on shooting bullets, they kept on shooting smoke, just kept on and on and on. It would not stop. I was standing there, and I had the kids, and I started breathing, and I couldn't breathe anymore, and I felt like I was breathing my last breath, and then the air cleared. And the only thing that that could be was the power of God that kept me alive. That is why I'm so committed and so loyal to John Africa, because if it was not for my belief, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I would be dead thanks to the cops in Philadelphia. I cannot take away from May 13th because my family was in that house May 13th, 1985. And they were fighting for what we were arrested for in 1978. And in doing that, our family had exhausted every avenue to get us out of jail because they sentenced us 30 to 100 years in prison because one cop was shot with one bullet. They charged 9 of us with the death of one cop. The cop was standing on the corner against the pole. Moved people are down in the basement facing that cop. He got shot in the back of the head and the bullet traveled downward. It would have been impossible for Move to have shot that cop. And they knew it. Everybody knew it. Even the cops knew it. In trial, they knew it. But because they wanted to get Move off the street, because they wanted to lock us up, because they wanted to stop John Africa's teaching, they charged 11 of us with the death of that cop. But they let 3 of them go because they said they wasn't committed Move members. But those of us, the 9 that said we were committed Move members, they kept us in jail. So the point wasn't keeping Move in jail because we was guilty. The point was, the fact was, they kept Move in jail because we were committed to John Africa. And we want everybody to know that we will never stop giving our life to this struggle because people need what John Africa has to give. And we are setting that example for people to do that, you know, so people can live life the way it's supposed to be, you know what I mean? But we can't because of this system. But, I mean, it's going to take generations, but we can start now so people can do little things that help the air, little things that help the water, little things that help the soil, because we need those things to sustain our life. Mama, the earth, what we call mama, is feeding us, is giving us water. But we don't want to pay her. We don't want to pay her not putting all those pollutants in the air, the water, the soil. We're setting an example, y'all, for people to follow, for people to see that it can be done. I mean, but it has to start somewhere. And let's start now. Let's start with the children. Let's start with the work so we don't have to be slaves to this system. You know, we don't have to bow down to something that is not right, that's not keeping us healthy. You know what I mean? We don't have to do that. And that example we showed y'all for the 41 years shows you that we don't have to do it. We stood up against a system, y'all. We refused to say that we was guilty or we was innocent, and they refused to let us out of jail. We got denied over and over and over and over. Even the people that run this system know that we were innocent. But despite that, they still kept us in jail, still did things that they felt like would break us, to make us feel like we need to move. But it didn't work, and they had to let us out. And they're not happy about it at all. And they're not happy that we're talking to y'all. So given the reality of what you dealt with, how did you survive it all? Day-to-day living. Maybe you can tell a story. So how did you fight back? How did you, aside from your ideology, what did you do tactically?
We know we have to stay strong. Keep a hold on to our belief. The things that we do physically is a result of our belief. What helps us out in situations, like the situation where they told us when we first came to prison that we were going to be put in the hole. And when we asked how long would we have to be in the hole, the guard said, what's your sentence? We said 30 to 100 years. And he said, that's how long you're going to be in the hole. Not for doing anything wrong, but just because we're MOVE members. And we had to go a hunger strike confrontation to defend our belief, to show them that they are not going to persecute us, beat us down, and break us. So we went on a hunger strike, 45 days, no food, and just a little bit of water. So the prison got scared, and they sent six big 200-pound, 300-pound male guards into each of our cells. We had already been without food for over 45 days, jumped on us, held us down, put our face into the mattress so we couldn't see what they was doing, raped us of our blood, shot us up with some other chemical that made all of us sick, and then told the public that they were putting us back in population now because we submitted to their health test instead of just saying, you know, we're backing off because these women have showed us that they are strong and they're not going to break, and we're scared about what could happen if these women die in here. Those are the kind of things we had to face in there. We were always being challenged with our commitment because people see men as strong. They know MOVE men as strong, but they don't know about the strength of a MOVE woman, and John Africa showed them how strong MOVE women are. We had to fight and defend ourselves for over 40 years, because each time we were transferred to another prison, we had to show that prison administration that we cannot be broken. So we had to use our beliefs to get ourselves strong and show these people that we're committed to John Africa, we're committed to our belief, and we don't care what you come at us with, we're not giving in.
I want to tell you about this one time we were transferred to a prison, and they had us all in the hole, and they had us locked behind these doors. It's isolation. It's the hole inside the hole. The doors are about this thick, and they have a little glass cubby hole like thing that you could open up and slide the food in. In that room, they had a window, but the window was like frosted glass. You could tell if it was day or night, but you couldn't actually see the details of any object. So they had us locked in there, two in a cell. They had three windows drilled in the top. That was our air circulation. Me and Janine were in the cell together. They fed us off of paper plates. So when they gave us a paper plate and we ate off of that, we had to eat so slow, because it was so hot and humid in there, that when we got finished eating, I would take a paper plate and start waving it up and down while Janine sat down so she could get some kind of circulation through the air, because there was none in the room. Then when I got done doing that, Janine would take the paper plate and I would sit down and she would start waving it real slow because, you know, she couldn't exert herself either. And after months and months, mold started growing on the wall. And, you know, we were complaining and complaining and complaining, and they never did anything. So a tour was coming through. Some government people were coming through the RHU, so we started making a lot of noise, banging on the doors, and they came back and saw the mold that was growing on that door and on the walls. They let us out of that isolation period. But they tried their damnedest to kill us in there. I mean, who does that? That's how desperate they were. I mean, they would take measure after measure after measure after measure to see what they could do. That fight in that cell, they came in, the men came in, and they were saying something to me, and I didn't respond the way that they wanted me to respond. So the officer punched me in the chest, and I was just a little thing, and he punched me so hard, I went all the way to the back of the wall. Janine got up and said, "No, you don't." She hit him so hard in the chest, he buckled over. He said, "We are MOVE women. We don't have to take this from you. We are right." It was so, no hesitation, nothing at all. Like, "You put your hands on my sister?" "No, it's on," and he knocked his butt for you. I'm telling you, we don't have to bow down and cower to men, because John Africa teaches us that there is no separation. I might not be able to carry something as heavy as a man can carry, but I can carry something that fits in my height and my weight.
And that don't make the man stronger than me. It makes us the same. While the men are so protective of the women and the women are protective of the men, we work as a unit. We don't make separations. And when we had to deal with men in the system, they would be shocked. We're even. We're equal. There's no separation in life. People make that separation. That's why women were treated and are still treated so badly, you know, like they're beneath. And we need all of you brothers to stand with us, to lift us up, to show people that we are no different. We breathe the same air. That's just the way that it is. There is no separation. And that's why you see such a strong balance in our belief, because we don't teach those separations. We don't teach them to our children. And that's why they have the respect for a woman the same way they have as a man. They won't put a woman down because she's a woman and elevate a man because he's a man. They see them, they're taught to see them by John Ashton's teaching as equal. We're taught to see the trees as equal, to say they're taught to see the birds, the grass as equal, because all life is the same. People talk about bullying, people talk about racism. We revere life. If everybody revered life and saw themselves as they see everybody else, as they see the animals, as they see the water, as they see the grass, then they will not mistreat them, because they don't want to be mistreated. And this is the way that we teach our children and why they have respect for life. There would be no bullying if people felt like that, if they felt like you're the same as me. But because there's so many separations, divisions, and everything else in the system, people want to elevate themselves and feel better than somebody else. And we should all feel the same, because we are the same. It's teaching our children and other children on the street.
Yeah, because people don't understand that John F. could teach, we're connected. You can't hurt the air and not be affected by it. And what John F. is telling people and showing through MOVE is that when you stand united, when you respect each other, like Dan was saying, then you won't have those problems like the global warming, because you would respect the earth. You wouldn't rape the earth of the oil and just destroy whole forests in, 10 seconds a day, a whole forest is exterminated. You wouldn't do those things to the earth, and so you wouldn't have global warming. You wouldn't have the polar bears trying to find somewhere to live because the global warming is melting their glaciers and their cold temperatures. You wouldn't have whites hating blacks, blacks hating whites, and on down the line, because you would see, as John F. could teach, we're no different. We're no different. The color of our skin don't make no distinction as far as superior, inferior. It's just the color of your skin. The blood inside of our bodies is all red. We all do the same thing. We all have to eat. We all have to sleep. So John F. could teach and teach you that if you respect all of life the same way that you feel about yourself, then you won't hate. And when you don't hate, then you won't mistreat or hurt no form of life. And this is the message from John F. through the example of MOVE, that we are here to display, demonstrate to everybody.
Well, thank you very, very much.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.